I'm Michaela Talkington.
And I'm Jo McGrath, and we're the founders of Flourish CIC,
an organisation which helps women changemakers to flourish. And this is our Supporting Women in Social Enterprise podcast, designed to help you on your journey to make a positive difference. Let's get started. In this episode, we're looking at PR and marketing to maximise the exposure of your social enterprise project or campaign. We find women leading social enterprises really need this skill, but are often not able to put huge budgets behind this, or are not sure of how to do it. They often need to box clever when it comes to PR and marketing strategies. So,
coming up, our producer Vic speaks to Fran Nutt, who is the artistic director at Tandem Theatre, a creative arts charity. Fran tells us how investing in PR and marketing has impacted the charity.
In our Flourish Talk section, we've got some great stories for you from people who are using PR and marketing to push their social message. But first, Vic meets up with Grace Dyke, one half of Yellow Jigsaw, a social enterprise who Flourish supported in their early days. They're a PR and marketing agency who specialise in working with good causes. We catch up with Grace in between delivering a PR workshop for our Flourish network. Get ready for some expert advice on your press releases, campaign approach and social media.
Hi, my name is Grace Dyke. I'm a co-director of Yellow Jigsaw, which is a community interest company. For those of you that don't know what one of those is, it's a social enterprise, and we work purely in the not-for-profit sector, supporting charities, housing associations and other social enterprises with their PR and marketing.
Tell us, me and the listener, why you started Yellow Jigsaw.
Well, that was about five years ago. We're going to be five this year. But it's actually myself and a former colleague and dear friend called Kirsty Day who started up Yellow Jigsaw. We met whilst working for a national charity. I was running projects and campaigns, and Kirsty had moved over from being a reporter at the Manchester Evening News for the past 12 years to manage their media relations. And we found that we worked really well together. We enjoyed it and worked with a lot of other charities whilst performing our roles, and identified a real need for these smaller organisations who have the greatest stories to tell but don't have the skills or capacity to tell them. So we wanted to set up a social enterprise which purely helped this sector to tell these stories and to inspire people to support their good causes.
Brilliant. Who are some of the organisations that you've worked with?
Any sort of charity that you could think of, to be honest. We have the likes of youth groups, drama groups, covering events, doing their ongoing PR. So a wide range. And we work a lot with credit unions, which are the not-for-profit ethical alternative to your high street bank. And I work with them involves trying to widen their membership, get as many customers as possible. We work with a lot of Age UK partners. It's a cliche, but every day is definitely different and unique.
Some people who might be listening to this podcast might think that it's just an extra cost to get PR in.
Yeah, that's something that, well, actually we thought we would battle with when we started Yellow Jigsaw. How do you justify the cost? But it comes down to, do you want support? Do you want volunteers? Do you want people to support your campaign? Do you want to be lobbying MPs and councillors about your cause and to advocate for the people that you represent? And the answer to all those questions is inevitably yes. Charities wouldn't exist if they didn't have a strong voice. So we just exist to support them, to share that voice and amplify it as loudly as possible.
Tell me about some of your success stories then.
Thinking of ones that particularly stand out, we do love the credit union work and we are particularly proud of that. When we first started working with a few of them in Greater Manchester, they didn't have any sort of presence, and since working with us, they now have an annual credit union awareness week where they take over the city of Manchester or whichever area that they represent in Greater Manchester and do some really lively and exciting things that people just would not necessarily associate with a credit union. So last year we did a campaign linking in to Halloween to say don't get spooked, get local. So don't get scared off by those high interest rates by high street lenders, but instead go to your local credit union. We had zombie takeovers outside Selfridges in Manchester and in Eccles. So that was a really fun and successful way of engaging the local communities. And they were inundated with new memberships, and they've been struggling to keep up with demand since, to be honest. So that was a really creative one, which we enjoyed delivering and got the results that the client wanted. I mean, our focus really is on trying to upskill the charities so that they don't become dependent on us or any other outside agency, which does do a sort of a job, but that means that we've done our job well, we think. So we're really proud of a housing association that we've worked with. And there was one member of staff who was really reluctant to any aspect of communications, just wanted to do his job. And our brief was to go in and really empower the staff to believe that they had great stories to tell on a daily basis, doing their jobs, fantastic stories that really represented what the organisation was about, and they should feel confident in sharing them. And the greatest success was getting this really, really reluctant guy tweeting left, right and centre, and you can't stop him now. So they've got a really engaged workforce. The communications is in-house, but they've all got the skills to do that now. So we really enjoy that transformative work where there's a bit of sustainability to what we do rather than dependency.
That's really interesting. So some of your success stories is not just the exposure that you're giving to charities and good causes, but also the institutional inner changes that you're making.
Yeah, and that's more important than ever in a charity when budgets are tight and sustainability in all its forms is an issue. Communication is key. So it isn't something that you can simply pay somebody else 20 miles away to do, no matter how many team meetings we have and no matter how much we get under the skin of an organisation. It has to come from within. It should, we believe, be part of their structure as an organisation. It can't be a second thought, because that is how you survive and that is how you succeed. It's very much part of our ethos to make sure that the organisations we work with, once we leave, can actually continue to tell their stories.
It's interesting that you mentioned just before you're working with a credit union on a campaign. Mm-hmm. A lot of us thought that your job was just getting people in newspapers. What's this campaign stuff?
So yes, we can be that outsourced PR department where we are purely getting people in the press, making sure that events and whatever's going on is picked up and told to the local audiences. Mm-hmm. But also we manage campaigns, and they are meaty and they are time intensive and they are absolutely fantastic to work on. We really enjoy them. We would work with the client to understand what it is they want to achieve from their communications. And I would say that as the key piece of advice for any organisation, large or small, thinking about how they should approach their PR and marketing. What is it that you want to achieve? Is it more customers? Is it more volunteers? Is it to reach a fundraising target? Think about who it is that's going to help you to achieve that objective, and then shape your campaign around that. So that's what we do on a regular basis, and what we've done for the past few years with credit unions in the region. And it's an opportunity to do that in a really creative and out of the box kind of way. So we will plan PR stunts, social media content, we'll get in all their partners in their network, as many organisations and influential people from councillors to MPs, to get on board and support the message that we're trying to push out with this campaign. And we'll do that for a set amount of time, usually a week, with a massive run-up and a lot of planning.
Yeah, how big's that run-up? How big's the lead time for something like that?
Never enough, yeah. Can I say that, by the time it's been signed off? But usually for Credit Union Awareness Week stuff, it's about 2 months, so that we can get all the content. The whole idea is that you flood every relevant communication channel with your message. So that means we need graphics for social media, we need videos, we need quotes, we need content for websites to direct people back to explain why we're doing what we're doing. We need to make sure the website's ready for this influx of visitors that you're going to get, and it's going to tell those visitors the message that those visitors would have seen when they've picked up on your campaign. Getting involved in media relations, prepping TV and radio for that sort of stuff. So it's all encompassing, but it can have a really high impact when it's well thought through, it's creative, it's original, and it's well planned and prepared. A campaign like that can have a huge impact. And you don't have to do that every other month. You know, that could be an annual thing. Create a new awareness day or an awareness week for your good cause and do something really stand out for it. And it can make a big difference. it's well worth putting in the time and delaying it. I mean, you may think that something is relevant and crucial to do next week, but your audience won't know that. Do it when you can really give it your best shot, because we have seen in the past things done last minute or haphazardly maybe, and you're not going to get the same results. The key to those sorts of campaigns is numbers of people who are going to support that campaign to get the message out. So you're not just using your own communication channels, you're using your referral network, your customer base, your volunteer base, the organisations that fund you. All of those are your army who should be delivering that campaign message, but it's not going to be their priority. It takes a lot of time to get them on board, make sure they've got the content they need, making sure they're actually going to share it when you want them to. So that sort of stakeholder relations aspect of a campaign takes time, and it won't happen next week.
Do you have any, not necessarily the ones that Yellow Jigsaw have done, but have you got any favourite campaigns from good causes or social enterprises?
I really, really liked the male suicide campaign, which came out last year, and I loved the PR stunt of it. I think what really makes a campaign successful, as well as your stakeholder relations, is doing that stunt, which is original, but is clever and gets your message across. So the suicide campaign, I think it's CALM, Campaign Against Living Miserably, all about mental health and suicide in men. They were trying to get across that 84 men die every week, I think it is. But they wanted to get that across in this campaign. Every good cause has stats like that. How do you get that across creatively? So they got models of 84 men created, and they displayed them on the top of a high-rise building in the centre of London. And they got so much international PR coverage for that. It was incredible. And just putting out that stat, 84 men in a press release would not have had the same effect. But having it so well thought through, having 84 men, each of the men was based on an actual man that had died, and the family members, their friends had been involved in creating that sculpture. So there were 84 stories of how families had been affected. It was just perfectly thought through. And campaigns don't have to always be a massively budgeted campaign. Recent ones which really resonated with people is just the simple identification and adoption of a hashtag. So hashtag Me Too, hashtag Black Lives Matter gets the point across, and people can use that hashtag to share their own experiences. There's no magic recipe for creating that viral hashtag, but there's definitely something we can learn from them in terms of tapping into how people feel and giving people an opportunity to share their experiences. If you are trying to create a campaign and a hashtag, and it is very explicitly and unashamedly just linking back to your organisation, people are going to see through it and see it's not authentic, and they're not going to attach themselves to it and share their experiences for you. Yeah, that's an important point, really. Be authentic and do it for the right reasons. It's about the people you serve and not the organisation. You've got to put your audience's hat on. What's important to them? What are they going to share? What issues do they have? And shape your campaign around that. And the same goes for press. If you're writing a press release and it's all about your organisation rather than the community, the reader, then you're not going to get picked up, because it just sounds like an advert.
So true. I think that's like the number one, numero uno bit of advice, isn't it?
Absolutely. As I've mentioned, Kirsty, my colleague, saw many press releases in her time at the MEN. I think she said she used to get about 300 every day. And the amount that just started with the name of an organisation and the fantastic work that they'd done, that isn't reporting on news. So always try and lead your news story with the impact you've had on people or on an individual. I think people can get intimidated by words like PR and marketing. You're telling stories and you're hoping that they're going to get shared. So what's the first thing you tell your mate down the pub about your organisation, about your campaign? That is going to be the message that you lead with. We often talk about that as the pub test. Just think about that before you start shaping your messages. And it should help you to avoid to become more corporate and organisationally sort of biased.
Let's say, for example, I've got this amazing event coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that it'd be perfect for my local paper to pick up. So what I'm just going to do is write about it, tell them where it's going to happen, pop on like the ticket price and stuff, maybe like where it's going to be, and then they'll hopefully pick it up.
In an ideal world, wouldn't that be brilliant? And maybe they would if they hadn't already received 30 other press releases about events that day, and they've got limited space, be it in a printed newspaper or online. So you're going to have to work a little bit harder than that, I'm afraid. If there's a press release that a journalist is looking at, they're going to be looking at something that is unique, that is relevant, that is timely, and often fits into one of three categories. They're either looking for a really quirky piece. So for example, I live in Wigan, so I often share this example. They have a pie eating competition. They could have written into the local paper about that. But again, is that unique, pie eating competition, particularly in Wigan? Perhaps not. So they decided to send a pie up into space to promote it. So they've ticked the unique and quirky boxes there. And that got not just local press, but broadcast coverage. So TV and radio nationally. If it's not going to be quirky and it's actually a serious event or whatever the press release is about, make sure it's human interest. So what, like I've already mentioned, it is focused on an individual rather than your organisation, or it's hard hitting. So if it's really going to affect, or it's about a cause that affects a lot of people in your area. So for example, a homeless charity is organising a sleep out. You want to be including the stats about the number of people who are now homeless in that certain area. The number is growing, the services that are now available, and then you talk about your event. So again, you're talking about that human issue rather than just your event. So I'd say to you, go back to your press release, perhaps redraft it a little bit and make it more timely, relevant and unique with a human interest angle. And then, yeah, maybe it will get picked up.
Oh, thanks, Grace. What's the three things that we can do to up our PR and marketing game right now? With no money.
With no money. Can I suggest some pretty theoretical things? So my advice wouldn't be to start tweeting immediately, to start publishing on Facebook or posting on Instagram or write that press release right now. It'd be to stop, think about what you want to achieve and think about who your audiences are. No matter who we work with, be it a startup or an organisation that's been in place for 40, 50 years with the likes of credit unions, we start with asking, who is your audience? Do you know what makes them tick, what's important to them, why they use your services? So for any listener, I would recommend that they start, number one, by trying to understand the audience. From that, I'd then be able to understand what communication channels I should be using. Should I be focusing my efforts on Facebook, or actually, should I be on Twitter, or should I be engaging with the local press or with stakeholders such as councillors to try and get my good cause the recognition that it deserves? And then my third piece of advice is to don't take what you do for granted. Don't take the amazing stories that you come across every day as just a given and just a normality that local Joe blogs won't find amazing. A lot of our work with clients is about trying to get that across so that staff recognise when an incredible story happens and to pick up on that and to make the most of it, whether that's sharing it on social media or sharing it in the press. And to be able to pick up on those stories, I'd go back to that pub test.
So we've talked a lot about the good things that can happen with PR.
Okay.
And positive campaign stories. Do you train organisations how to deal with potential PR disasters?
We absolutely do. I mean, we wouldn't be doing a great job if we only talked about the benefits of PR and we unleashed this world of PR on our clients and didn't prepare them or protect them for any reputation risks. And just make sure that organisations have the right processes in place to protect them in the first place. So a lot of charities and social enterprises inevitably are working with vulnerable people. So it's really important to make sure you've got robust consent procedures in place to make sure any stories that you're telling of the people you're working with, you've got the consent and everybody's happy with the way the story's been portrayed to be able to share that in the media. It's always good to have holding statements ready, no matter what organisation you are. So if for whatever unexpected reason. There is outcry in the press, perhaps about services being cut. An upset counsellor has a statement which links to what you do in the community, and the press want to hear from you. Always, always responds. How bad does it look when an organisation is approached and they've refused to comment? It is not going to help your situation. And the press want to have the comment as soon as possible. Otherwise, you're going to miss the boat and you're going to potentially miss the opportunity to share your side of the story. I do not believe that any listener will go away and do that. And now I've said this. Out of everything, you know, think about your audiences, think about who you should be speaking to and how. But I know that people, they don't do it. It's like insurances and stuff, you know, it's bottom of the list. So just remember what I said about holding statements and just hope. Get us in and we'll write it for you.
Nice plug.
Thanks.
Thank you, Grace. That's really, really helpful. I'm sure it'll be really helpful to our listeners as well. Thank you, Grace. Just quickly, before we go, tell us more about those workshops and how we can find out more about Yellow Jigsaw, so maybe book you.
Yeah, we really enjoy the training aspect. Again, it's all about upskilling and sending trainees away with lots of skills and knowledge and lots of templates and tools that they can actually take back to their organisation and put the learning into practice. So we work a lot with Nicola and the Flourish Network and put on a series of joint events that are called the Big Heart Flourish Events. So you can check them out on the Flourish Eventbrite page. There's regular ones every few months around PR, marketing, communication skills. We also do partner workshops with the likes of the Small Charities Coalition, which is a national network of small charities. And of course, you can get us in ourselves. So we'll do a bespoke workshop based on your past PR successes, or dare I say it, failures. Look at where it went wrong. Give you the skills on how to do it better in the future, but also map out the PR opportunities that are actually coming up for your organisation. So it's really practical and really valuable. And like I say, we really enjoy delivering those. So if that's of interest to any listener, I would recommend that you visit our website, yellowjigsaw.co.uk, and they can find out more.
Fabulous. Thank you so much.
The Yellow Jigsaw team really are the experts when it comes to PR and marketing for good causes, and they make it very easy to understand. It's clear that good planning is the key to effective PR and marketing campaigns. That was recorded at a recent Flourish event. We have a programme of great events coming up if you're interested in starting or running a social venture. To find out the latest, simply visit eventbrite.com and search Flourish CIC Manchester. Coming up, we speak to Fran Nutt, the Artistic Director from Tandem Theatre, and she tells us all about how investing in PR and marketing has impacted the charity. But first, Vic is out and about to see how PR and marketing is working across a wide range of social enterprises. There's plenty of inspiration here to get your PR and marketing strategies on point and get people to notice you. This is Flourish Talks.
My name's Alice Tuma McAlpine. I am co-editor of The Meteor, which is a community journalism project. I think it is essential for good causes to have a good PR and marketing strategy. I think one of the issues is that we don't like words like PR and marketing strategy because it sounds dead corporate and evil. But basically all it is just being able to tell your story so that people can connect with it. And that is essential, because if you can't do that, then how are people ever going to get involved? So I think we need to be a bit less afraid of the words and just see them as like telling our story, basically. I like to think of it as storytelling, although that's starting to sound a bit corporate and buzzwordy as well now. So, you know, you just got to keep on changing it.
What makes a story stand out for you? What makes you want to cover a story?
For us at The Meteor, because our whole thing is about amplifying marginalised voices and telling stories that aren't covered in the mainstream. So for us specifically, what we're always looking for is if there's a group of people that haven't been listened to by the kind of traditional media outlets, or if there's some kind of exciting action going on that isn't getting enough coverage, or if it's really important and serious issue that is kind of maybe either intentionally being buried or just hasn't been told in an engaging enough way so that people don't know about it. We're always really interested in seeing stories locally rooted, so in Manchester, that say something that hasn't already been said or isn't the usual stuff that you might see in traditional news outlets.
Do you think social media has a role to play in helping spread those messages and stories?
Yeah, I mean, we use social media a lot. Most of our traffic to our website actually comes through Facebook. For better or worse, we are definitely quite reliant on social media. There's pros and cons to it. I just had someone get in touch with me recently that wants to write a story about the positives and then the dark side of social media, because obviously, like, we do talk a lot about the bad things, but you know, it can be quite a useful instrument for organizing and getting those stories that don't usually get covered out there. We do need it. I mean, it's, you know, it's kind of a fact at the moment that it's just, that's where people are, and you have to go to where people are. Don't go on all the platforms. I think the main thing to do is, before you open any or start any kind of social media accounts, is actually think about who it is that you want to reach and think about where they are. So if, you know, certain age ranges are more likely to be on Snapchat or Instagram or Facebook or Twitter. So rather than just going on a platform for the platform's sake, you have to think about the people that you're actually trying to connect with, which is the same whether you're doing online stuff or stuff in the real world.
Alice, thank you very much.
I am a beautician. Yes, I've recently launched my book about well-being, so I just take advantage of social media. What I usually do is, with my flyers, what I usually do is pay, you know, people to do it door to door, putting them through letterboxes, and which has really helped, especially with my business, and pay for advertisement on social media. It's gone a long way. Yeah, first of all, my followers have has increased. You know, I get called for events, you know, to come and talk about my products, and that way they know me. It has actually improved my income as well. Not only people know me, but people want to, you know, try my products, and it's good business as well, you know, so yeah.
My name's Sis, and I'm the caretaker and founder of Idle Women. Idle Women's an arts and social justice project, and we create spaces for women and girls in places where they're least imagined.
Do you have a PR and marketing strategy?
We have had, since the very beginning, a PR manager in a freelance position, Jeanette Scott. She's really fantastic. She understands the project. I remember at the beginning we thought, oh, we've only got so much money. Do we have a fancy website, or do we try and get the best press we can? And we went with that decision. Yeah, sure, our website's been shit for a long time, but Jeanette's been fantastic, because actually I think for us, being a tiny dot in the landscape in Lancashire, where often the decisions are made in the, you know, Manchester, and you know how London centric everything is, we have very good press. We've been in The Guardian, we've been on front page of BBC News, and that is very good for us long term. We think it's very important to disseminate what we're doing, because what we're doing is, no one else is doing what we're doing, and it can be done. So to have a really good press is vital for us.
Has it resulted in outcomes? Has it been worth it, I think I'm trying to say?
Oh, definitely, for sure. There's something about, I mean, it's unfortunate, and this is the way that institutions work and funders work. For example, we had very good press around our initial On the Water tour, where we built this narrowboat and toured it around. And subsequently, because of that press, our track record was built quicker, and we won the Ambition for Excellence Award, which was a significant pot of funding to do the power tools project and the construction project in St Helens. So things, it might not feel like, I mean, I often feel like just getting back into bed with some crisps, but it does feel like these things are cumulative. You know, we've got a good relationship with Alice Fowler now, who's a Guardian writer. So, you know, it's little things like this, they build and build, and it's great for us.
You are listening to the Supporting Women in Social Enterprise podcast with Flourish CIC.
We'll have more Flourish talks in our next episode. Details of that coming up later. Now we speak to Fran Nutt, Creative Director of Tandem Theatre Arts.
So we're sat here in a little snug in the Federation building in Manchester, right next to the tram track. So if you do hear a
tram spotting.
But yeah, we're bang next to it. So it's like you are here with us in Manchester. This episode of the Flourish podcast is all about PR and marketing. How important do you think PR and marketing is to your organisation?
I remember having this conversation with Grace and Kirsty, who run Yellow Jigsaw, and it's when I first met them. And I said to them, oh, I'd love to have some PR and marketing stuff for our organisation, but we don't have the money and we can't prioritise it. Kirsty said, actually it should be a bit of a priority because it can really help your organisation. And that did flip my idea of it. We do have a website. Our website drastically needs improving. I suppose I think of PR and marketing as a way of communicating what you do. Because our community arts organisation, it's quite niche what we do, and sometimes it's quite hard to explain what we do and the impact we have. So PR marketing is really just a vital way of communicating that to other people. And as we are reliant on grant funders, you know, one of the first things they'll ask on a grant application is, what's your website, or, you know, what do you do? And we need to be able to explain that in a very succinct and eloquent way. Obviously, a website is just one element of PR and marketing. But when you are reliant on other people donating their money or giving you grant funding, you need to be able to communicate to them a lot of information very quickly. And that's where people who are experts in PR and marketing are really important.
So marketing, what you do, website,
yep,
is a good place to start because everyone is on the internet nowadays.
Yes, I've heard it's quite a popular thing. The interweb.
What organisations might stumble on is that websites are difficult to do. I think the tools available now make it really, really easy for you to create something quite impressive with little or no skill.
Yeah.
I think there's plenty of tools out there like Wix or Squarespace that can make absolutely stunning things.
Yeah.
That doesn't require much time.
Yeah.
And that can be done as you go.
Mm.
In a way, I think marketing maybe is easier nowadays because of the internet.
There's definitely more avenues. However, it's how you use those. I think that's something that's quite difficult because actually if you don't know what you're doing, you can fall into cliched traps. Twitter, for example, you need to be clear and concise and initially engaging. So something that's been interesting for me, in the past when I do a tweet, it always started the same. Check out this. Isn't this great? Fantastic. I'm just sort of swapping those three intros for every tweet. So it was really nice when we had a PR and marketing company come on board and just to see what they're tweeting on behalf of our project. Oh, actually, oh, you can use emoji. You know, just little things that they, oh, actually, that's a really good way of communicating that point in such a short space.
One of my big, big bugbears is the two words you've just mentioned, check out. Honestly.
I'll never use them again. I promise.
If you feel like you're about to put check out, don't, because no one wants to check it out.
No, that's true. Well, I think that's the other thing about Twitter, is that for a long time it just felt like I was going, I've eaten a sandwich. You know, it just felt like, who cares? Nobody cares about this. I'm just doing this because it's something I feel I have to do. In terms of my attitude to PR marketing, there was something that somebody shared on Facebook about an artist's journey in creating a piece of art. And we do that with our organisation, but we get our participants to create the art. But the process is the same, where you're like, oh, you start off by going, oh, is this working? I've got an idea. Let's see. Let's go. Let's experiment. This is working really well. Oh my gosh, this is revolutionising our art form. Oh my gosh, this is awful. This is going to be terrible. We can't tell anybody about this because it's going to be really, really bad. I always get that feeling just before the event, and then the event happens, and then afterwards I go, oh, that was really, really good. We should have told people we were doing that. And that's the process that I have when I'm in things or when I'm producing things. And that's just probably my own insecurities. So I struggle to promote what I do because I have that fear of, oh gosh, what if people do come and it fails and it's awful? Especially, you know, it is hard to rely on participants when doing events because we work with the most vulnerable people in Greater Manchester, and that can be a lot of pressure, but it can be amazing what our communities that we work with can do. But there is always that fear where, gosh, what if they just refuse to walk on stage for our performance, or what if they kick off, or, you know, there are these sort of these issues that never arise, but you do feel like they could. And so that scares me in a way sometimes with advertising. So it was great to actually give that responsibility to a different organization, because they were promoting our events whether I wanted to or not. They were promoting them, and that was great.
And so this was for a project that you've started to wrap up now called
Greater Manchester Game Changers.
Game Changers.
Yeah. So this was a project funded by the Heritage Lottery Fund, and we were looking at the suffragist movement, different from the suffragettes movement. Just a brief difference is that suffragettes were willing to break the law to campaign for women's suffrage, whereas the suffragists wanted to use legal means. That was the focus for the project. And we worked with a young women's group in every borough of Greater Manchester. So we had 10 groups, and they were recreating the campaign materials that the suffragists created in visual arts workshops. The project had a few stages. So the first stage was recreating the past. So they recreated all these materials such as banners, badges, sashes. And then we brought the groups together to recreate a protest march. This was at Salford Museum and Art Gallery. So in the art gallery, they have Lark Hill Place, which is a Victorian street. So it's almost like a movie set. And we've got the groups in costume with their banners and their sashes to parade down the street. And we took some fantastic photos of them. So that was sort of the first stage of the project. The second stage of the project was applying what happened in the past to today. So something the suffragists used is they used poetry and they used music. So they took part in poetry and music workshops and debating. Then the groups had two displays. They had one for International Women's Day. In each of their boroughs, in their local heritage centres, they displayed all the stuff they created on the project. And then we brought all the groups together at Manchester Central Library to recreate a bazaar that the suffragists did back in the early 1900s. And then what we're doing now is we're going to do a couple more sessions with each of the groups, and they're going to achieve the Bronze Arts Award, which is a level one qualification. So in a nutshell, it's young women looking at the suffragists and taking part in a variety of creative workshops.
At what point in that project did you say we should get some help on PR and marketing?
That was back in the planning stages. And I remember it was really last minute. And I remember giving Grace from Yellow Jigsaw a phone call just going, what? Like, what could you do if I was to get you to do some marketing? What could you do? And she sent me sort of a blurb of stuff they could do. And I just sort of chucked that in the application, really. I didn't give it loads and loads of thought. I just thought this will need an element of PR and marketing, and it needs people with more expertise than myself.
Yeah. What did you want to get out of it? What was your end goal?
I suppose the main thing, because we did have these events, so we did have International Women's Day displays in the local boroughs and the bazaar event, is that it was really important that we had audience members that attended these and we generated local interest, especially the stuff that happened in all the boroughs. Because something we're really passionate about at Tandem Theatre is trying to reach all of Greater Manchester. Everything is very Manchester central. What Yellow Jigsaw were able to do was really promote it locally. So we went on a local Trafford radio station. We were able to contact local newspapers and we were featured in a lot of those. And we were able to generate local interest. That was something I don't think I would have done. And so it was brilliant to be able to have Yellow Jigsaw take control of that. There were processes because some of our partners were youth services that are run by the council, so that we had to liaise with the council's press officers. And that's something that Yellow Jigsaw were great at. And it's just things like that are really important, because it's important you get the permission of the partners that you're working with. And some of the young women we were working with were very vulnerable, so we had to be very careful in how we promoted those particular groups and how we marketed them.
Was it worth it then? Was it worth the line in the budget on the funding application?
No. Yes, completely. And I've said to them, yeah, if I can, you know, any other projects, I will definitely be putting them in there. I suppose that the difficulty you get when applying for grants is that they don't always like featuring money for marketing. It can be seen as maybe sort of a luxury, which again was how I had seen, that's how I had seen marketing, whether this is a luxury, we shouldn't have to spend money on it. But it enhanced the project. Mm-hmm. And I think we could enhance our organisation if we were able to fund more of that activity. You don't have to do loads. With a kind of organisation, we don't need to be featured on adverts on ITV. Like, it's not that level of marketing. We focus so much on the nuts and bolts of the delivering of our programmes. But there needs to be thought put into how do you market what you do and how do you promote what you do. And you need experts to do that, and especially Yellow Jigsaw in particular, because they're experts at working with community groups. Not every marketing firm might appreciate that. I suppose it's another thing as well, when you're applying for a fund, it's really hard to work out how much do I give, how much will this funder let me allocate to things like marketing and management, and because without those the project will not reach its potential. So they're absolutely vital, but some, you know, funders aren't as keen on that. I think just looking at those extra bits that you can put into a funding bid that can just help further promote it and explain it. Just a little bit might be enough.
On a lot of funding applications, there is that question, how will you promote the project?
Yes, there is, yeah.
And even if that's a little bit of money there to put a staff member on a bit of a training session on how to use Twitter effectively or how to use Facebook effectively, there is a feeling that I need to be on social media, so I'm going to get Instagram, I'm going to get a Twitter, I'm going to get a Facebook, I'm going to get a podcast, I'll get a Pinterest. And it's overwhelming and it's diluting your message. Do a few really good, I think.
We deliberately are not on Facebook, mainly because we work with adults and young people. We don't want a platform where our groups can mix. Twitter is more public and very few of our participants ever are even aware that we're sort of on there promoting the stuff that we're doing because they're not on themselves.
So why are you on those platforms if your beneficiaries aren't on them?
We're not on there for the participants themselves. That's how we promote what we're doing and network with other organisations. I suppose that's what I'd see the purpose of those.
Audience is a big thing to think about when you're marketing and PRing. So you know your audience on social media isn't your beneficiaries. It's an awareness raising exercise. And
Because what we do is actually quite varied. I mean, over the past year, we've worked with adults at risk of homelessness, young people identify as LGBT+, and young women from every borough of Greater Manchester. And that does quite vary. Like, some organisations will just work with one of those groups. At the end of the day, it'd be nice if someone went on our Twitter profile and they just scroll down it, they'd see the variety that we provide. Yeah. I think that's quite cool.
Do you have a strategy, PR and marketing strategy?
Not at the moment. It's very difficult for our organisation. We are very project-based at the moment. Core funding is hard to come by. And it's probably one of those things, actually, if we did improve our PR and marketing, that it's sort of a vicious circle that could improve our chances of getting core funding. We can't fund PR and marketing until we get some core funding. So that's a bit of a tricky one. And because we're a charity, what we get, usually we have to spend. We are able to build up a little bit of funding for overheads, and we're trying to build up our reserves. So it's tricky. It's definitely tricky.
So, Ongwen, what's your top tips for a good cause who's thinking about dipping their toe into the water, bigging up their PR and marketing?
Okay, first of all, look online, because there's always top 10 tips for doing Twitter. Do go on those first, because they can just give you a nice foundational boost of what to do. Find your local community voluntary service organisation. I'm based in Salford, and Salford CVS are amazing. They will want to support you. And find local, anyone in the private sector that you know personally probably helps better, or even just approach cold call, can you help me with our PR marketing? And then actually, if you do have some funding, maybe look to an organisation that's got experience of working with charities and community groups and see if they can help you. That there would be my top tips.
Yeah, I like
it. Sure, very useful.
Yeah, you've done a bit of a tiered approach there. Start on your own. And I think one of the really interesting things you come up with there is the private sector one. Private sector organisations want to help good causes.
Yeah.
They might not necessarily have cash. Actually, they do have cash, but it's very hard to unlock.
Yeah.
And what they do have in abundance is people and people and space. So, but just make sure that you've got a good ask.
And also, that does take time.
Mm. Yeah. And again, the reason why these things might not be valued is that there's no guarantee that any of this is going to work.
Mm.
You're better off having a dabble. Yeah. Doing the dabble well than not dabbling at all.
Yeah. I suppose finding other organisations that you want to be like and finding out how they promote themselves, I suppose.
Yeah. I say that to a lot of people when they want to do a podcast, is listen to podcasts.
Yeah.
I don't think, having spoken on this podcast about the importance of PR and marketing, I don't actually devote much time to it either. And actually, if I devoted more time to it, it might be better than it is at the moment. So it's how you view it yourself, not just delegating it always to another organisation. But
the change starts with you.
Yeah.
So you just get on board.
I do. This has been useful for me, this interview.
So tell us your Twitters. How can we find out more about Tandem?
At Tandem Theatre. It's Tandem with a T. Sometimes people think it's Camden when I'm speaking about this through audio. Why is Camden Theatre in Manchester? No, it's Tandem. Tandem is in the bike. T for Tango. And our website is tandemtheatre.com.
Awesome. Thank you very much. I've learnt a lot. And you've been awesome. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
A really great interview with Fran there, who I've worked with personally over this past year, and I'm always inspired by her vision. We felt it was important to include someone who has outsourced PR and marketing rather than just struggle alone. As a social entrepreneur, you often have to do it yourself, but sometimes it does pay to invest in professional support, either through your profits or grants that cover these costs. And Fran has really seen the benefits of this. That's it for this month's Supporting Women in Social Enterprise podcast. We hope your head is swirling with great ideas to get you maximising the presence of your awesome social enterprise. Thanks to Yellow Jigsaw and Fran Nutt from Tandem Theatre, and a big thanks to you for listening. We've had some amazing feedback since we launched this podcast in November. If you're loving what you're hearing and you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please do leave us a review. Or if you're listening elsewhere, do share your thoughts and ideas on social media and tag us in at FlourishCIC. This means that we can be heard by more people, and all this great advice and top tips are shared around the world. Now, there's lots of ways for you to get involved with what we do here at Flourish. To date, we've supported over 750 women, so why not connect with us via our website, flourishtogether.org.uk. Another way to connect is coming to one of our events. One of those events is for this year's International Women's Day. We're running it on the 9th of March, and it's called Reinventing the Manual. We think it's about time more men join the conversation around equality, and we're going to demonstrate male panels don't have to be pale, male and stale. Quite the opposite. For more info and tickets, look us up at Flourish CIC Manchester on Eventbrite. The next episode is out on March the 1st, and it's all about measuring your social value and features Kat Lecoq, social impact coach and business mentor. See you then.
Supporting Women in Social Enterprise is a Mike Media production and is produced and edited by Vic Elizabeth Turnbull.